And we are live at the Conscious Life Expo here in LA, February 2019. This is Rob Rose standing in for Debbie Dashinger on the Dare to Dream podcast, and I have the immense good fortune to be here with Teal Swan. Teal, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Good to be on the podcast. Hello.
Well, there's so much that you're doing. First off, you know, just from what little I've learned about you, I really want to honor you for having the courage to do what you do. It sounds to me like you're venturing into territory where there might be some risks, and you're functioning from a position of strength, and it sounds like you're standing firm and helping people in the way that you really want to help them. It sounds like you're helping people all over the world. You've got a really big online presence. So what I'd like to do, rather than, you know, having you recite your whole, you know, litany of how you got started and, you know, that kind of thing. We got a little bit of time here, but I'm really fascinated to learn what you're doing now, what's on the immediate horizon. But just to give it a little context for our listeners, can you give us just like a real quick overview of what the framework is of what you do? There's several components. You've got the Facebook community. You've got the Philia retreat in Costa Rica. You know, just kind of a big picture, high level overview of things.
The big picture, high level overview is that I teach to human suffering. So I don't know how to categorize that. For overcoming trauma, I've got completion process for people who are dealing with isolation, which is the root of addiction as well. I've got, you know, all of this new teachings around the new book, The Anatomy of Loneliness. For people who are working on relationships, I've got connection processes for, yeah. I do have a very large tribe around the world that they consider themselves an intentional community, and that's called the Teal Tribe. So they're doing all kinds of events as well themselves.
Great.
Gathering.
Well, one thing that really struck out about learning a little bit about you, it seems like you've got a really well-defined process for at least some level of replication of your personal abilities. You know, I guess over the past few years, you've learned how to help people in certain ways, and rather than just try to do it yourself, it looks like you put together a really clear and defined process of training other people to do what you do, and you put together this technique called the completion process. So How is that looking? Are there getting to be, you know, more and more practitioners that you know, people who are troubled can reach out to throughout
world? Yeah, which I mean, I'm so excited about that, because one of the main components for healing is to have somebody in it with you. People need their pain to be seen. So training people around the world who are able to do that is making it actually a lot easier for people to overcome their own personal trauma. And it's very important for me to do that, because trauma is everywhere, and every person experiences trauma. It's just about where they fall on this continuum scale that is trauma. So if everybody on Earth who's walking the planet today has experienced some kind of trauma, then and there's no way in hell I can work with all of them. So I have to find a way to get these types of processes in the hands of people who, I mean, honestly, I wrote this process not even so that you need a practitioner to use it, which was very risky of me. But I wanted to take that risk, because if there's somebody who needs assistance and needs access to these kinds of tools, they can't afford a $100 visit to see a therapist to give it to them.
Absolutely.
And they can't afford, you know, a much bigger fee now to see me.
It would be cheap for a lot of...
For me, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. The only way to scale things, really, if you're in my line of work, is to charge a crap ton of money for personal sessions. So what I'm trying to do is to get all of the demographics. So I can do, like, a huge event where people can attend for $20. I can put free content everywhere, right, for people who can't afford any of it. I can provide these types of tools for the price of a book. Or, you know, I can go all the way up to, like, individual sessions for thousands of dollars.
So how many practitioners are there now throughout the world?
Hundreds. I don't know exactly the number. I think it's like 300.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty exciting. So I understand that some of these people are taking their business to a whole new level themselves. Are there, like, more advanced levels of the completion process people can do, or can people take this as a foundation and, you know, maybe then train other people so it kind of, you know, scales virally or anything like that?
We're actually considering that right now. I'm going to make different levels. So it's my intention, because the completion process is just one skill, mm-hmm. right? being somebody who can facilitate all kinds of things is actually much more complex than that. So I'm going to have a lot of different levels where if people really want to dedicate themselves to, you know, what I consider to be my work in the world, then they're going to have a much bigger profile and have careers out of whatever it is that I'm doing. But the reason that I wanted to train people in completion processes, let's say you've got just like a psychiatrist, psychologist, MD, and they're not looking to do anything like I'm doing. But they've got somebody who comes in, they've got chronic illness, can't figure out a way around it. Trauma's the root of this, by the way. They have a tool now that they can use, which is what I love about that process. It's such a good accessory to every other type of healing. So it's not like it's a contradiction to Reiki. It's not a contradiction to mainstream medical science. It's not a contradiction to the traditional psychotherapy process. So I wanted people to be able to actually have it as a tool, regardless of whether they wanted to become spiritual guides or not.
So you actually have some credentialed psychiatrists and psychologists,
yes,
that are starting to use it as an...
No, obsessed. Okay, so what's happened basically is that I want to change the face of mainstream mental health. That's
absolutely
one of my ultimate goals.
It needs it. It's in a horrible state of disarray right now.
Yeah. Even psychiatrists, who are the best in the world, will look at you and say, we know nothing about the brain. Now, the first thing that I do when I have people come train with me is they have to put this lens on where they see the world through the spectrum of trauma. We have to consider that it doesn't matter whether somebody is suffering from a physical dysfunction or a mental dysfunction or emotional dysfunction. It all has its roots in trauma that's unresolved. After I put those lenses on someone, it changes their reality. So what I've had happen is several psychiatrists, even people who are the chief admitting officers for these inpatient care clinics, who are starting to realize they can't do their job anymore after understanding what it is that's causing all of this. So I've got people that are dedicated, like fully dedicated their career. If I want to start a new place, they're going to start it, you know, for me and with me. They're actually signing themselves up to do clinical trials.
Absolutely. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Are there any brick and mortar locations that...
Not yet. Not yet.
I don't know. Is there anything you can tell us about that? Any future plans?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I'm actually working with two psychiatrists right now to try to start something up. It's going to be either in Nevada or Idaho, I think.
Wow, that is awesome. That is really exciting. Well, you mentioned some of the different types of trauma people experience, and I agree. I mean, there's so many types. We've got our soldiers that we all honor for their work in Iraq and Afghanistan, and there's been so much sadness with what some of these guys have experienced. We've got people that have experienced childhood trauma like yourself. There's been, people might be victims of crime, be it, robberies, burglaries, even, a relatively minor crime can be very, traumatic. Somebody knocks you down and steals your wallet or your purse.
That's
horrible.
It
is. It's a horrible experience, so.
But I'm more aggressive than that.
Yeah.
I'm saying that trauma is distress without resolution.
Okay.
The majority of people that you see walking the planet who have abundance issues today, actually, it's nursing trauma. So we have to understand that most of what we are normalized to actually is trauma. But because it's normalized, we don't recognize it as such until, of course, X amount of generations in the future when they look back and say, oh, my gosh. So let's say that you're a tiny baby. You have no way of communicating. Everything that you want and need on demand comes through your mother until one day with no communications cut off. No understanding about that. You have a lot of distress in your body. No awareness about why suddenly you can't get what you want / need. There is no resolution. You have to cope with it, and coping is the mechanism that actually creates this whole trauma cascade where somebody ends up dysfunctional as an adult. So everyone has experienced trauma.
Okay. that makes sense. It's a matter of degree, I suppose. How would you... I'm sure the approach is different. I'm sure this gets into some of the more fine nuances of the training, which I don't really know about. But just to give us a high-level overview, let's say you've got a soldier with PTSD, or you've got somebody who's maybe a victim of domestic crime. Like, kind of two different situations, Would you treat them differently,
no,
or is the process very similar?
The process is exactly the same. It's just trauma without resolution. You just create resolution for whatever situation is at hand. That's why training these people is difficult. I'm looking for a very specific trait within people because you have to have so much adaptability, because what one person needs for resolution in one scenario will be totally different than another person. So it's about meeting whatever walks through your door. There is no kit that fits them all.
Well, I mentioned the courageous aspect of this earlier. There's, you know, been people who have criticized. Every pioneer in any field is always, you know, going to take some risks and get some criticism. But I think risk is part of life. I mean, I'm not risk averse myself. I've taken a lot of risks, and it seems like you're, you know, taking some risks too, to be, you know, sort of a pioneer and sort of, you know, maybe go against the grain of established mental health treatments.
Yes.
And you know, that's, I think, an awesome thing. But the rewards have to be so much greater. So what are your thoughts on just the nature of personal responsibility? If someone is out there and they're troubled, maybe they're, you know, suicidal, they can turn to the Suicide Prevention Helpline, or they can turn to the Teal community, or maybe go see a psychiatrist or something like that. If they turn to the Teal community, you know, some people might say, oh, you don't have medical training and all this, you know, maybe what you're doing is risky. But don't you feel that out there in the world today, we need to take personal responsibility for our health choices and the modes that we use to heal ourselves? And if we choose to do something that's a little bit riskier, we wanted to go do some MDMA therapy or psilocybin therapy, something like that, it's all going to be risky.
Yeah.
Don't you think that the risk is warranted?
Honestly, the biggest risk you can take today is typical medicines that they'll give you in a psychiatrist's office.
Absolutely.
So you're taking a risk no matter what you're doing. It's just, I mean, if you've got some guy who's trained in some school, mostly the stuff that they teach there, by the way, is promoted by the people who benefit financially by them teaching that material.
Absolutely.
But, I would love it if people took personal responsibility for their decisions. At the same time, I feel like people in my position have to be aware of the amount of pressure that we're taking on and the seriousness of it. But I'm unwilling to not take a risk for people who are in the same position as me, just based off of saving my own ass. I'm not going to do it. So.
Well, what are your thoughts on, you know, some kind of parallel therapies? And, you know, I don't know if you get involved in, you know, plant medicines. I'm sure you're very well aware of sort of the psychedelic renaissance, so to speak.
Yes.
All the work that's been done in PTSD, depression, end of life, cancer care, things like this, with substances like psilocybin and MDMA, ibogaine, ayahuasca. What are your thoughts on that? Do you use those things at all in your work, or do you feel that they're an effective option?
I have tried them myself. I've seen them be immensely successful. I am not against them in any way. I'm for them in many cases. My thing is that it's like, I don't want people to be dependent upon a substance when mankind's consciousness in and of itself, if you actually are stepping into a space of free will and starting to live in alignment with your authentic self, there is no need for it. And that's the true freedom that I'm trying to lead people towards. If this is a tool that people use to get there, then so be it. My main issue with all of that stuff is just because people don't understand how important set and setting is. You can't be doing those types of things without somebody who is very knowledgeable about those things leading you through the process, because it forces integration before people can actually integrate it.
Okay.
Most people, and like I said, like, I love this tool for some people, but if you're struggling here in your day-to-day life and then you go and you take one of those medicines, it literally removes the ego or shows you the ego so clearly that it's like a completely life transformational situation. And it's not always beautiful. Most of the time,
absolutely.
It isn't, actually.
Absolutely, yeah. I've definitely heard some horror stories as well as some, you know, very successful stories.
So what is somebody supposed to do if they go through that type of an experience and they don't have anybody to help them integrate the experience into their day-to-day life? It's the disparity between those two states that people can't hold.
Well, again, I'm kind of assuming responsible use of such substances, which would imply maybe a guide.
Then I love that idea.
Great.
But that's not how a lot of people are doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
And anything, this is what makes my job so hard, is that anything in the world can be used as an escape mechanism. So these medicines can be an incredible tool for healing and an incredible way to avoid oneself. You know, just like meditation, just like any tool I create, anything can be used to facilitate the ego instead of to integrate the ego.
Now, what would you say, just hypothetically, if somebody, or maybe it's not hypothetical, maybe people have probably talked to you about this. What if you've got somebody that's really not experiencing any trauma and say, hey, you know, I'm pretty happy with my life, you know?
They wouldn't be seeing me in the first
relationship.
Place.
Well, what if they said, Teal, do you have any ideas about how I might perform better?
Yeah, I mean, that's easy.
I might take a good baseline,
you know,
a happy life,
that's so easy.
And take it to the next level.
That's easy.
What would you say to somebody like that?
I'd figure out what it is they want to achieve and figure out what's preventing them, just like I would everything else, and it's easy as hell. I mean, everything short of the people that I like to deal with are easy. I like to deal, and I mean, my specialty is really the people who are suffering the worst of all. It's the people who are like, no one has an answer for me, I have never had an answer, and they've got such disparity between these fragments internally that they're a constant war. Everything short of that is like a walk in the park. I mean, one of my favorite things to do, actually, is to work with professional athletes, and that's usually what it's about. It's like, you know, help me perform.
Oh, great.
It's
that's, you know, kind of what I was thinking of, or maybe, you know, Silicon Valley computer engineers or anything.
Oh, yeah, but they're emotionally totally messed up, so.
Okay, well, that might be a whole other thing. You know, one kind of tends to think of the nerdy guy at home who spends all his time with his computer, but can't really stereotype too much. But what is going on with the Philia retreat?
Oh.
That seems like a really fascinating thing. You probably spent a fair bit of your time down there. You're currently residing in Costa Rica, right?
Yeah.
Is a Philia retreat your main residence then?
No, I can't live on premises because it's a publicly disclosed location and I have enough people who want me to die that it's not a good idea.
Okay.
But I spend a hell of a lot of time right there and I love that place so much. Yeah, it's crazy, though. I mean, the land itself is such shamanic land that it catalyzes everything. Yeah.
So. Walk me through, like, an experience that somebody might have. Let's say they're coming from L.A. and they want to go and have this experience. I guess it's a week-long experience, generally. Is that correct?
It depends on which one of the events that they're doing. If they're doing one of my events, may God have mercy on your soul. Okay, so what it looks like, if I'm doing one of my curveball retreats, that's the one I like the most. People usually come there with a set intention. You know, either they're having relationship issues or they can't find their purpose or whatever. And what I do is to walk them through several processes that I never intend to teach publicly, by the way, because they're so incredibly intense. I've managed to create it's like a shamanic medicine experience without the medicine, is what I do. And so with a group that's about 20 people, I like to restrict it. I'm not doing more than 40 people for those. You're basically bearing all of your subconscious stuff in front of everybody on display to see. But based off of actually visually being able to see whatever you are not currently seeing, now you have the awareness necessary for the change you want to make. But it's just as intense as an ayahuasca experience. If you've had that before, you know what it's like. You see reality and then you can't go back again. Which is what I like. That's my goal. I don't want people to leave that door feeling like they can go back to the same life.
Very interesting. So people basically leave that a transformed person from when they came. What would be an example of somebody who's maybe one of your favorite clients or case studies that you can think of that came in one way and came out another way?
Well, I had somebody come to me with cancer and leave without it. That was fun.
Well, that's pretty huge.
Yeah. I mean, the doctors were freaking out. He was supposed to be on chemo, totally done for.
Absolutely amazing.
Totally gone. See, but things this is the thing. When you're in my line of work, these miraculous healings, it's normal. Especially because the body can actually clear itself of cancer in like a 48-hour period. So that's one of the easiest ones to shift, in fact. Yeah.
Well, you've talked to people, so I know that there was somebody who interviewed you and you said, okay, well, I'm not getting that you ate a real healthy breakfast today. Could I ask you for just a quick freebie and tell me how I'm looking health-wise and that sort of thing?
Endocrine system is suffering with you.
Okay.
Otherwise, you look okay. It's not like... It's mostly your endocrine system. You'd benefit by doing trampoline work. Do you ever do anything like that?
I do jogging and jumping, I know it stimulates the lymph system.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm aware of that. I haven't done as much lately, but you're talking about just the rebounder, just the little trampoline, just, you know, bounce up and down on it for a while to stimulate the lymph glands, get your...
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, I know they're cheap on eBay, so I might go grab one of those. Well, that's great. Thanks for that. You've mentioned that you have the ability to see inside the body, and you've had this ability ever since you were 4 years old. Is physical work, you know, an important part of what you do, helping people with, you know, physical ailments, or more so the trauma? Or I'm sure it's probably related somehow.
No, they're all entirely related. That's why I stopped. Like, in the beginning, I was a lot more about the energy work processes and dealing more like that. Like, I would look at somebody's body and be like, well, this is what we have to change physically. But what I noticed is it didn't matter how much physical work and how much energy work I was doing, it would always come back. So I was like, wait a minute, there's this deeper root here. And I started watching the way that thought patterns are, like, going into the body. Based off of seeing those thought patterns and how they feed into the body, I realized what was actually causing this disparity in the body. And then it was about, I got to get a person to change their whole perspective. And then it was sort of like an accessory / no point, you know. It's not what I want to teach primarily, which is why I'm not, like, going at people for nutrition and things like that. But if I can teach somebody to change the way that they feel, then that pattern is no longer feeding the physical ailment inside the body. So...
Well, it makes a lot of sense. That's most of the questions I had. You've been very gracious with your time to, you know, cover these points for us. I'm sure our listeners will really benefit. Let's let people know where they can go to find out, you know, what you're doing now, stay in touch with you, learn about, you know, your current and future plans. You know, maybe if somebody's interested in becoming a practitioner of the completion process, you know, where are the best places to find you online?
My website would be the best, teelswan.com, because I collect everything there. So it's sort of like the Mecca where you can go to see the videos or the blog or the products or events, whatever. Yeah.
Awesome. Anything else you'd like to let our listeners know about as far as you know, things coming down the pipeline for the immediate future? Or
TV show.
Oh, really? Wonderful.
Yep, I'm going to do a TV show, but it's going to be really super exciting because I'm going to be helping people, kind of like what I do on stage, but inside people's homes. So it's my hope that if I'm working with somebody like that and you identify with the character, the advice that I'm giving the person on the screen is like a takeaway or a take home for the people watching.
Excellent.
Conscious media is actually where I want to take the majority of my focus.
Excellent.
Instead of, you know, as opposed to instantaneously starting centers for changing the justice system, which is phase 2 of my career, and all of those types of things.
And where will people be able to find that? Were you working with Netflix or Amazon yet or anything?
Okay. I can't say.
You gave me a wink, so okay. Top secret, guys. So I guess we'll need to stay tuned. Keep in touch with teelswan.com, and, you know, maybe then...
I'm not going to keep it a secret, don't worry. When it's out, I'm like, it's out, everyone!
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure we'll be shouting from the rooftops. Well, Teel, thank you so much for your time today. And Dare to Dream podcast is most grateful, and we will get you up on our site as soon as we can. This is Rob Rowe with the Dare to Dream podcast, standing in for Debbie Dashinger, signing off. All right, Teel, take care.
You too.